black man has always protested against slavery, oppression, and discrimination. His protest has assumed many forms. The written and spoken words of speeches, pamphlets, petitions, and resolutions, as well as acts of defiance, rebellion, escape, suicide, and sabotage. An editorial in the first issue of the first Negro newspaper, Freedom's Journal, asserted, "We wish to plead our own cause. Too long have others spoken for us." The selections which follow are confined largely to words of black people, with the inclusion of a few historically significant statements of white workers for Negro freedom. Some of those captured in Africa and shipped to America on slave ships defied their captors by committing suicide. Gustavus Vassa, captured when he was 11, later described such an incident on the ship on which he was carried to Virginia.
"One day, when we had a smooth sea and moderate wind, two of my weary countrymen who were chained together, preferring death to such a life of misery, somehow made through the nettings and jumped into the sea. Immediately, another quite dejected fellow, who on account of his illness was suffered to be out of irons, also followed their example. And I believe many more would very soon have done the same if they had not been prevented by the ship's crew, who were instantly alarmed. Those of us that were the most active were in a moment put down under the deck, and there was such a noise and confusion amongst the people of the ship as I had never heard before, to stop her and get the boat out to go after the slaves. However, two of the wretches were drowned, but they got the other, and afterwards flogged him unmercifully for thus attempting to prefer death to slavery."
Mutinies sometimes broke out on slave ships, despite careful watch kept to prevent such uprisings. On the ship Amistad, in 1839, Joseph Sinke, son of an African king, leader of a revolt, told his followers,
"Brothers, our hands are now clean, for we have striven to regain the precious heritage we received from our fathers. I am resolved that it is better to die than be a white man's slave."
During the period of the American Revolution, petitions against slavery were addressed by blacks to both British and American authorities. In 1774, a petition addressed to General Gage, governor of Massachusetts, to His Majesty's Council, and to the General Court stated,
"We were unjustly dragged by the cruel hand of power from our dearest friends, and some of us stolen from the bosom of our tender parents and from a populous, pleasant, and plentiful country, and brought hither to be made slaves for life in a Christian land. Thus we are deprived of everything that hath the tendency to make life even tolerable. The endearing ties of husband and wife we are strangers to, for we are no longer man and wife than our masters or mistresses thinks proper, married or unmarried. Our children are also taken from us by force and sent many miles from us, where we seldom or ever see them again, dared to be made slaves of for life, which sometimes is very short by reason of being dragged from their mother's breast. We therefore beg your excellency and honors will give this its dear weight and consideration, and that you will accordingly cause an act of the legislative to be passed, that we write our freedoms and our children be set at liberty at the year of 21, for whose sakes, more particularly, your petitioners is in duty ever to pray."
Benjamin Banneker, a free Negro of Maryland, taught himself mathematics and astronomy, and was one of the commissioners appointed to plan the city of Washington. In a letter to Thomas Jefferson in 1791, he included a lengthy exposition of the evils of slavery. A portion of it follows.
"You publicly held forth this true and invaluable doctrine, which is worthy to be recorded and remembered in all succeeding ages. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Sir, how pitiable is it to reflect that although you were so fully convinced of the benevolence of the Father of mankind and of his equal and impartial distribution of these rights and privileges, that you should at the same time counteract his mercies in detaining by fraud and violence so numerous a part of my brethren on the groaning captivity and cruel oppression.
Father Josiah Henson, a slave who escaped to freedom in Canada, described the inhumanities of a slave auction.
The remembrance of the breaking up of McPherson's estate is photographed in its minutest features in my mind. The crowd collected round the stand, the huddling group of Negroes, the examination of muscle, teeth, the exhibition of agility, the look of the auctioneer, the agony of my mother. I can shut my eyes and see them all. My brothers and sisters were bid off first, and one by one, while my mother, paralyzed by grief, held me by the hand. Her turn came, and she was bought by Isaac Riley of Montgomery County. Then I was offered to the assembled purchasers. My mother, half distracted with the thought of parting forever from all her children, pushed through the crowd while the bidding for me was going on to the spot where Riley was standing. She fell at his feet and clung to his knees, entreating him in tones that a mother only could command to buy her baby as well as herself and to spare her one, at least, of her little ones. Can it be believed that this man, thus appealed to, was capable not merely of turning a deaf ear to her supplication, but of disengaging himself from her with such violent blows and kicks as to reduce her to the necessity of creeping out of his reach and mingling the groan of bodily suffering with the sob of a breaking heart? As she crawled away from the brutal man, I heard her sob out, "Oh, Lord Jesus, how long shall I suffer this way?"
The activities of the American Colonization Society, organized in 1816 by whites, including slave owners, for the purpose of transporting free Negroes back to Africa, were bitterly opposed by almost all blacks. Thus, a meeting in Philadelphia in 1817 passed this resolution unanimously.
Whereas our ancestors, not of choice, were the first successful cultivators of the wilds of America, we, their descendants, feel ourselves entitled to participate in the blessings of her luxuriant soil, which their blood and sweat manured, and that any measure or system of measures having a tendency to banish us from her bosom would not only be cruel, but in direct violation of those principles which have been the boast of this republic.
This sentiment was repeated at various other meetings and conventions of Negroes. The State Convention of Ohio Negroes in 1849 resolved
that we will never submit to the system of colonization to any part of the world, in or out of the United States, and we say once for all to those soliciting us that all their appeals to us are in vain. Our minds are made up to remain in the United States and to contend for our rights at all hazards.
A small minority, however, welcomed the idea of returning to Africa. But only free Negroes were permitted to choose this course. The American Colonization Society established Liberia on the west coast of Africa for settlement. And in 1827, the Liberian blacks addressed this message to American Negroes.
The first consideration which caused our voluntary removal to this country and the object which we still regard with the deepest concern is liberty. Liberty in the sober, simple, but complete sense of the word. Not a licentious liberty, nor a liberty without government, but that liberty of speech, action, and conscience which distinguishes the free enfranchised citizens of a free state. We do not enjoy that freedom in our native country. Forming a community of our own in the land of our forefathers, having the commerce and soil and resources of the country at our disposal, we know nothing of that debasing inferiority with which our very color stamped us in America. The burden is gone from our shoulders. We now breathe and move freely, and know not the empty name of liberty which you endeavor to content yourselves with in a country that is not yours.
For the slaves in the South, one direct method of protest was rebellion. Three major uprisings threatened the Southern slave owners, and their leaders became heroes to the black abolitionists. Gabriel Prosser led a force of 1,100 slaves against Richmond in 1800. Denmark Vesey's rebellion of 1822 was aimed against the city of Charleston. And in 1831, Nat Turner led a small group of Virginia slaves from plantation to plantation, killing slaveholding families as they marched toward the Southampton County seat. All were defeated by betrayal or armed force. One of Vesey's group, a slave named Rolla, made the following statement in court.
I know Vesey. On one occasion, he asked me what news. I told him none. He replied, we are free, but the white people here won't let us be so. And the only way is to rise up and fight the whites. When I went to Vesey's house, there was a meeting there. The room's full of people, but none of them white. And that night at Vesey's, we determined to have arms made. And each man put in 12.5 cents toward that purpose. At this meeting, Vesey said we were to take the guardhouse and magazine to get arms, that we ought to rise up and fight against the whites for our liberties. He was the first to rise up and speak, and he read to us from the Bible how the children of Israel were delivered out of Egypt from bondage. He said that the rising would take place last Sunday night week, the 16th of June.
The free Negroes of the North had been organizing anti-slavery activities since the beginning of the 19th century. In 1827, the first Negro newspaper, Freedom's Journal, owned and edited by Samuel Cornish and John B. Russworm, was published in New York City. The first editorial of the new paper set forth its purpose.
We wish to plead our own cause. Too long have others spoken for us. Too long has the public been deceived by misrepresentations in things which concern us dearly, though in the estimation of some, mere trifles. For though there are many in society who exercise towards us benevolent feelings, still, with sorrow we confess it, there are others who make it their business to enlarge upon the least trifle which tends to discredit of any person of color, and pronounce anathemas and denounce our whole body for the misconduct of this guilty one. If ignorance, poverty, and degradation have hitherto been our unhappy lot, has the eternal decree gone forth that our race alone are to remain in this state while knowledge and civilization are shedding the enlivening rays of the rest of the human family?
A more militant note was struck in Walker's Appeal, a pamphlet published in Boston in 1829 urging the slaves to rebel. David Walker, a free Negro of North Carolina, had moved to Boston, where he learned to read and write and became active in the abolition movement. His pamphlet alarmed the Southern slave owners and resulted in the passage of stringent laws to curb the transmission of abolitionist literature in Southern states. Walker wrote,
America is more our country than it is the whites. We have enriched it with our blood and tears. The greatest riches in all America have arisen from our blood and tears. And will they drive us from our property and homes, which we have earned with our blood? They must look sharp, or this very thing will bring swift destruction upon them. The Americans have got so fat on our blood and groans that they have almost forgotten the God of armies, but let them go on. Remember, Americans, that we must and shall be free and enlightened as you are. Will you wait until we shall, under God, obtain our liberty by the crushing arm of power? Will it not be dreadful for you? I speak, Americans, for your good. We must and shall be free, I say, in spite of you. You may do your best to keep us in wretchedness and misery, to enrich you and your children, but God will deliver us from under you. And woe, woe will be to you if we have to obtain our freedom by fighting. Throw away your fears and prejudices then, and enlighten us and treat us like men, and we will like you more than we do now hate you. And tell us no more about colonization, for America is as much our country as it is yours. Treat us like men, and there is no danger, but we will all live in peace and happiness together.
In 1831, William Lloyd Garrison first published his anti-slavery paper, The Liberator. Garrison sought to arouse the conscience of his fellow white citizens. In his first editorial, he stated,
I am aware that many object to the severity of my language, but is there not cause for severity? I will be as harsh as truth and as uncompromising as justice. On this subject, I do not wish to think or speak or write with moderation. No, no. Tell a man whose house is on fire to give a moderate alarm. Tell him to moderately rescue his wife from the hands of the ravisher. Tell the mother to gradually extricate her babe from the fire into which it has fallen, but urge me not to use moderation in a cause like the present. I am in earnest. I will not equivocate. I will not excuse. I will not retreat a single inch, and I will be heard. The apathy of the people is enough to make every statue leap from its pedestal and to hasten the resurrection of the dead.
In 1840, a convention of Negroes in New York State met in Albany to protest against the law which required that a Negro must own property in order to be allowed to vote, while all other men over the age of 21 were permitted that right with no other qualification. The address to the convention by Alexander Crummell set forth the right of the black man to full participation in all the rights of American citizenship.
We are the descendants of some of the earliest settlers of the state. We can trace our ancestry back to those who first pierced the almost impenetrable forests. When the whole country, aroused by the injustice of British policy, arose as one man for the maintenance of natural and unprescriptible rights, the dark-browned man stood side by side with his fairer fellow citizen with firm determination and indomitable spirit. We are Americans. We were born in no foreign clime. Here amid the institutions that now surround us, we first beheld the light of the impartial sun. For no vested rights, for no peculiar privileges, for no extraordinary prerogatives do we ask. We merely put forth our appeal for a Republican birthright. We wish to be something more than political serfs and slaves. We fully believe in the fundamental doctrine set forth in the Declaration of Independence. We acquiesce in the sentiment that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. And we say, it is injustice of the most aggrieved character either to deprive us of a just and legitimate participation in the rights of the state or to make us bear the burdens and submit to its enactments when all its arrangements, plans, and purposes are framed and put into operation utterly regardless of us in their incipient state than if we were nonentities, but which in their practical operation act upon us with destructive tendency, eat away our soul and destroy our life. We ask for a living manifestation of belief in the above doctrine. We know already too much of its dead letter.
A new call for a slave revolt was made by the Reverend Henry H. Garnet at the National Negro Convention in Buffalo, New York in 1840. Escaped slave, later became president of Avery College and minister to Liberia. The conflict among the black abolitionists is shown by the fact that his appeal for slave revolts was turned down at the Buffalo Convention by a single vote.
Brethren, the time has come when you must act for yourselves. Think how many tears you have poured out upon the soil which you have cultivated with unrequited toil and enriched with your own blood. And then go to your lordly enslavers and tell them plainly that you are determined to be free. Inform them that all you desire is freedom and that nothing else will suffice. Do this, and forever after cease to toil for the heartless tyrants who give you no other reward but stripes and abuse. If they then commence
the work of death, they, and not you, will be responsible for the consequences. However much you and all of us may desire it, there is not much hope of redemption without the shedding of blood. Brethren, arise, arise. Strike for your lives and liberties. Now is the day and hour. Let every slave throughout the land do this, and the days of slavery are numbered. You cannot be more oppressed than you have been. You cannot suffer greater cruelties than you have already. Rather die freedmen than live to be slaves. Remember that you are 4 millions.
The most direct protest individual slaves could make against their bondage was flight. This protest could not be accompanied by manifestos. The entire process was as secret as possible. The Underground Railroad, which spirited slaves to free territory, was organized by white and black abolitionists. A letter from J.H. Hill to the director of the Underground Railroad in Philadelphia described the circumstances of his escape from Richmond, Virginia.
9 months I was trying to get away. I was secreted for a long time in the kitchen of a merchant near the corner of Franklin and 7th Streets. When I got tired of staying in that place, I rode myself a pass to Petersburg. And here I stopped with a very prominent colored person who was a friend to freedom. Stayed here until 2 white friends told other friends if I was in the city to tell me to go at once because they had heard a plot. Well, I rode a pass, reached Manchester, got off the cars and walked into Richmond. Once more, got back into the same old den. Stayed here from the 16th of August to the 12th of September, 1853. On the 11th of September, a message came to me that there had been a stateroom taken on the steamer City of Richmond for my benefit, and I assured the party that it would be occupied if God be willing. Then the next morning, I rose early, wrote my pass for Norfolk, left my old inn with many a goodbye, and after about 20 minutes of delay, I succeeded in reaching the stateroom. Yeah, my conductor was very much excited, and I felt as composed as I do at this moment. For I had started from my den that morning for liberty or for death, providing myself with a brace of pistols.
A dramatic escape was described by William Wells Brown, himself an escaped slave, who became a prominent abolitionist lecturer and a novelist.
William and Ellen Craft, man and wife, lived with different masters in the state of Georgia. Ellen is so near white that she can pass without suspicion for a white woman. Her husband is much darker. He is a mechanic, and by working nights and Sundays, he laid up money enough to bring himself and his wife out of slavery. Their plan was without precedent. Ellen dressed in man's clothing and passed as the master, while her husband passed as the servant. In this way, they traveled from Georgia to Philadelphia. They are now out of the reach of the bloodhounds of the South. On their journey, they put up at the best hotels. Neither of them can read or write. And Ellen, knowing that she would be called upon to write her name at the hotels, tied her right hand up as though it was lame, which proved of some service to her, as she was called upon several times at hotels to register her name. They are very intelligent. They are young. Ellen, 22, and William, 24 years of age. Ellen is truly a heroine.